Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the Silence of the Shams. That's what I'm calling this. Now, John Andrasik, who you're seeing right now, my good friend John Andrasik, Five for Fighting, fiveforfighting.com, to go to the website. But he has written a really excellent piece for the Wall Street Journal opinion section called "The Pro-Gaza Left is Oh So Quiet on Iran." I got to tell you, John, I've been trying to get this Silence of the Shams headline in. I am finally going to use it for this interview. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon, and it'll go up on Thursday, I'm sure, because the producer's not around at this point in time. But I do have an excerpt of this in our final word for tonight, because I just found this such a great point. And no one is really talking about this except for you. And, you know, a few of us have been doing this on social media. I was really happy to see this essay up at the Wall Street Journal. Before we get into it, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the Wall Street Journal with this?
Yeah, it was kind of wild. About a year and a half ago, the kind of editors at the Wall Street Journal noticed some of the work I was doing for Israel, the OK, We're Not OK song, some of my kind of speeches and excerpts from my concerts. And they reached out and said, you know, would you be interested in talking? And I said, of course, you know, I'm a big fan for over the years. I've always loved their editorial page. It's kind of one of my go-tos, kind of like Hot Air and, you know, the editorial page at the Wall Street Journal. But little did I realize they're very old school. And Matt Hennessy, who's one of the editors over there, said, all right, you know, what's your tour schedule? I'll come see you. And I'm like, oh, so this is not going to be a Zoom, you know? So he ended up flying all the way from New York City to Seattle. You can't go much further. And we sat down at a couch at a hotel and we talked, you know, a lot about kind of my kind of upraising, my views, Israel, Afghanistan, Ukraine. And they wrote a feature, Matt wrote a feature, basically, it was called, you know, The Lone Voice for Israel in the Arts. And which again, for me was quite the honor. My dad was really excited. and then since then, you know, they've asked me to do, you know, four or five op-eds, about various things. You know, most of it has kind of been, some of it's about the arts, about Hollywood, Israel, anti-Semitism, but not all. And literally yesterday morning, they reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we've been following what you're talking about, the silence of the Free Palestine crowd on Iran. Would you write something for us? And that, you know, that was 24 hours ago. So they turn things around pretty quick over there.
They do.
And they, you know, they also take my rantings and make them much more palatable for the public.
Well, you know, I've talked with you. I mean, I recognize the voice. I don't think that they've changed much of your voice in this. And it is really excellent. And I'm just going to quote from it for a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about this, because for the last 2.5 years or so, or 2.25 years, we've seen the hard left and maybe even the soft left turn out on the streets talking about genocide in Gaza, you know, from the river to the sea, free Palestine, all of this. And you say, as you write, yet American college campuses, so recently the site of passionate encampments in support of the Palestinian people, are eerily quiet about what's happening in Iran. The congressional micro-caucus known as the Squad, so quick to decry the suffering of women and children in Gaza, are oddly mum about the suffering of women and children in Iran, and Greta Thunberg's flotilla of humanity has yet to set sail to the Persian Gulf. I'm still laughing about that line. But it's, yeah. I mean, but this is serious. I mean,
yeah,
we have people who are being massacred in the streets, who are unarmed, who are being massacred simply because they are opposed to this rigid theocracy that is really the, like Palestine, like Hamas would be if they were actually in control of Gaza any longer. Pretty much the embodiment of what liberals supposedly despise, right? They oppress women. They refuse to allow a secular approach in anything. you know, they hate Jews, which is apparently the one point of convergence that we've got here. You know, I was writing about this the other day, and I did a little 60-second op-ed on Salem Radio about this, too, is that this is a regime that the left should absolutely despise, should have been despising for the last 47 years, clearly is covering for it now. And my conclusion to this is that this is the left hates America and Western civilization more than they hate oppression of women, oppression of women is bad enough, but you know, the rigid theocratic control of an entire population, the suppression of religious and ethnic minorities. I mean, you don't get a lot of land acknowledgments in Tehran, right? It just reeks of hypocrisy. And I, you know, our friend Adam Baldwin will always scoff at me when I bring up hypocrisy.
Yes.
Because you're missing the point. And that's correct. But I mean, it really is. I mean, this is really sort of a highlight moment as to the nature of the left in America and really the left in the Western world and what its aims actually are.
No, you're right. And certainly it's bad enough that we're seeing, what do you want to call it, hypocrisy, cowardice, evil of the college campus mobs. But certainly, of course, it goes far beyond. You know, there's not been one resolution, one condemnation from the UN, right? The media, till virtually the last couple of days, has been dragged kicking and screaming to cover the Iranian massacres that are happening as we speak. You know, for so long, every day we'd get the statistics from the Gaza Health Ministry. They had no problem telling us, you know, what Hamas was telling them about casualties in Gaza, but they seem to have this repellent attitude about covering the freedom fighters of Iran. And again, I think there's many reasons for that, but it does clearly illustrate the empowering of terrorists and evil actors that the left has been doing. And I have to throw Hollywood in there too. You know, we just saw the Golden Globes, you know, where we always get lectured on, you know, the world's travesties. And of course they were still wearing the red blood pins, the blood libel of Palestinians. Of course they were talking about Minnesota, but
yeah,
there was
pins for Renee Good. Yeah.
But not one mention of the Iranians look, this has been going on for decades. You know, there's been uprisings and they get murdered and it goes down. And so I think it just exposes that these folks, have really no interest in freedom. They have no interest in human rights, certainly women's rights. And they really have no interest in the people of Gaza, because if they did, they'd be calling out Hamas, which is basically Iran. You know, so I think there's a lot of, a lot of kind of nexuses to this. But, I was thinking the other day, like if you did a Venn diagram of people who free Palestine, send Maduro back to Venezuela, Iran's already free, it's the same people. And I think this probably more than anything really clarifies their one of two things, their moral cowardice or their complicity in the radical Islamic kind of terrorist movement to destroy the West.
You know, so much to unpack here. The Golden Globes definitely is worth unpacking to some extent here, because you're right. I mean, you had Mark Ruffalo talking about Donald Trump murdering people on the streets of Minneapolis, which is absurd. That wasn't what happened. But nobody there could talk at all about the murder of thousands of people who were just out in the streets demanding an end to oppression. And I think it really is. You and I both stumbled across this. I don't know if you stumbled across it. I stumbled across Tamina Debozorgi. I think that's how she pronounces it. Was an attorney for the Institute of Justice Institute for Justice in Washington, as you say in the column. And IJ does a lot of really great work, has nothing to do with this. It's mostly, you know, it's entirely domestic policies here. But I read her very long essay on X, and I thought that that was maybe the most, maybe even you were the one who, now I'm thinking about it, I think you were the one who referred it to me.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you get to our age, John, as I forget these things.
I'm with you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
John is the one who actually sent this to me now that I'm sitting here thinking about it. I thought it was one of the most brilliant deconstructions of what is actually going on here, which is that, and I had started to write this in the essay, and which is the reason why I think you sent it over to me, which was that the left is trapped in this occupier, occupied, colonizer, colonized mindset and have locked into it so bad that they've actually gotten it ass backwards. You know, Islam was a colonizing force. The Arabs were colonizers. The Arabs have colonized North Africa, the entire Levant, parts of the Caucasus, although mostly Islam. That's there aren't a lot of Arabs in Iran, but certainly in Iraq, pushing out some of the what would have been the indigenous populations in Iraq. It wasn't originally Arab. And then pushing all the way into Spain at one point before being pushed out. And yet, as Debogorzy makes very clear, the left equates them with the oppressed because they are operating in this paradigm where Islam is actually a racial characterization. And it's not. It's actually an ideology. It's also a religion, but it's also an ideology. And it's an ideology of conquest and oppression in most of the places where it's been. And not every place, but most of the places where it's been. And that's what we're seeing in Iran. That's exactly what's happening in Iran. And this is, I think, what the left misses, is that they just have lost the thread on this entirely. And they're looking at this as though the West is always evil, and anything that opposes the West, therefore, has to be a force for good. And it's simply not true. And it's demonstrably not true, both historically and contemporaneously.
Yeah, I can't think really of a more oppressive regime than Iran, perhaps North Korea.
In a completely different context, right? I mean, that's a Stalinist context. Yeah. That has nothing to do with the religion, right? It's a different ideology, but it's as repressive. Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, and another thing she mentioned that I thought was telling was it's also not white versus non-white. Of course, you know, it's very easy to, you know, America, they're the white boys, they're the white people oppressing the brown people. And I always laugh, you know, when they try to claim, you know, all Jews and Israelis are white. they haven't met many.
Yeah.
But that's their thing. Here's the white Netanyahu, you know, subjugating the Palestinians. So I think that's a dynamic. And I also think within the media too, there's a lot of this that this Trump visceral hatred for both him and Netanyahu, that they fear him getting any kind of credit for basically freeing Iran after 50 years. I think, you know, we saw that with Venezuela. There was very little joy about, you know, Venezuela being freed from Maduro. There was really no kind of articles about the fact that, you know, he stole the election and that political prisoners are being released under Marco Rubio. So I think it's all these things. It's basically the ideology, the woke ideology, the leftist kind of, many of the leftists have frankly moved to like these kind of dictatorial, repressive ideologies. Well, I mean, look what's happening in Minneapolis, you know, look what's happening in Minnesota. They're fine to support, you know, these little pockets of repression within our own states. They're right. They're getting elected by it. You see that in Dearborn, you know? So I think it's very hard for them to admit or come out and support the Iranian uprising because it would go against their whole worldview and everything they've been telling us, you know, for frankly a decade. So they would have to have this come to Jesus moment, and they won't. So they'll do everything they can to, I think, push it It was similar to like, you know, Joe Biden's dementia. They all knew it, right?
Right.
So they all knew, but it'll help Trump. And so we have to, you know, do the best thing for America and cover up the president's basically mental decline. Similar with Iran. I think many of them know, well, yeah, the mullahs are the bad guys, but, you know, hey, you know, we can't do anything that might help try. So again, I think there's a lot of, you know, different bodies, you know, with different worldviews. But at the end of the day, it just exposes this whole Free Palestine thing from the beginning has been a gigantic con job. And we've known that because the people that claim to free Palestine never say anything about Hamas using human shields, basically murdering supposed allies of Israel, throwing women off buildings, you know, all this stuff, gays and lesbians, you know, they've never cared about them. And we've known that. But I think this just shows you, you know, in a much clearer landscape that the whole thing's a fraud.
And this is the last line of your essay, right? It's almost as if the Free Palestine movement has nothing to do with freedom, human rights, or the welfare of innocents at all. And, I, you know, that's demonstrably true and has been the entire time as well. But I think it really does strip the mask off, if you will. You're not seeing people out there rallying for the Iranian people. You're also seeing a lot of people who are demonstrating against ICE at the moment in lots of different cities, which is a federal law enforcement agency enforcing immigration law as it's written. Now, enthusiastically, certainly, effectively, certainly, in places where the local states and cities won't cooperate with ICE to identify and remove illegal aliens who commit crimes. This is part of the problem, right? And not to get too far off the track, you know, the Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Frey, was on Fox and Friends this morning saying, well, if they're looking for these people, they should be looking for them in Texas, Florida, and Utah, of all places. I don't know.
Utah's all right.
Yeah, Utah's population is half that of Minnesota's. And depending on how you define the Twin Cities metropolitan area, Utah doesn't even have that many people in it. I mean, it does depend on how you define it. If you're defining it in television terms, there's like 3.7 million people in the Twin Cities metropolitan area where these raids are taking place. And that's still more people than are in Utah. But the difference is that Texas, Florida, and Utah cooperate with ICE. You know, they if they arrest somebody who is an illegal alien, they alert ICE, or if they have a detainer already for that person, they alert ICE, and ICE coordinates with them to take custody. Now, that's a little bit of a tangent. To get back to the part about protests, though, is that you don't see people going out onto the college campuses. You don't see people going out onto the streets to demand that the U.S. do something to free an oppressed people in Iran, because you say because it would help Trump, but I also think it's because Trump would do something about it. And they don't really want anything done about it. Now that brings us to what's happening today. Again, we're recording this late Wednesday afternoon. Trump came out a couple hours ago and said, oh, we're, you know, the killings have stopped and they're not going to do the executions. Which sounds like he's backing down from his red line because the Iranians have backed down. At the same time, there's a lot of chatter right now about the Iranians clearing the airspace over Iran. I think they expect to see something. I'm a little surprised that Trump hasn't acted in some way, because he set this red line on Friday. Were you a little surprised to see what happened this afternoon unfold?
I think we have to wait and see. You know, remember before he bombed Iran, he said it would be a couple weeks, and it was 2 days. I'm hoping it's a head fake. I mean, you know, you can only head fake so long till you kind of know. And if you kind of look at some of the movement of our ships and our military, and it's looking like something's going to happen. I do think if nothing happens, it is a massive failure from the president, because he told those people help is on the way. And so I believe there will be an action. I hope they take it and end it. I hope it's not a partial action. I hope the regime is removed. I hope the mullahs are overthrown. And like in Venezuela, I believe if that happens, and of course, you never know with these things, but if that happens and goes well, it'll probably be the most significant happening since the wall came down, maybe even more in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm hoping and praying that the whole world, you know, Marco Rubio, you know, wanted to reset the Western Hemisphere, which he did with Venezuela. I think this would reset the whole world for the better and for the good guys.
Not to blow smoke up your skirt here, John, but I do think about your song World.
Yeah.
What kind of world do you want? History starts now. And I think we're at that moment. And I have been reflecting a little bit on the Berlin Wall falling. It's a different situation. And I'm not necessarily sure that Iran would ever get to the stage with this particular regime where you could have a wall falling down moment. And I'm going to explain myself here in just a moment. The reason why the wall fell is because the Soviet system had utterly exhausted itself. Chernobyl was part of that. The dissatisfaction within the Soviet Empire was part of that. That's why Gorbachev was pushed into the perestroika and glasnost policies that actually accelerated this exhaustion. The workers in Poland obviously were a huge part of that. Afghanistan was part of that as well. But it was just exhausted. When the wall came down, the big reveal was that there was nobody propping it up anymore.
Right. Right?
The guards weren't going to shoot anybody on the wall. Because the system, they had lost confidence in the system. They had lost buy-in. Everybody had lost buy-in on this. So when they started pushing on the wall and it started to fall, nobody did anything. There was there was nothing. And so then the wall comes down and everybody's moving back and forth across the border. And within days, it felt like, I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but with looking back on it now, it just seems like within days, the entirety of Eastern Europe just opened up. Wasn't necessarily peaceful in all cases. You can look at what happened to Ceausescu, for instance.
Right.
there was some accountability in Romania. But for most part, it just went away. It just dissipated. I don't think that this is that moment. I think it could be as world-changing as the fall of the Berlin Wall. Because if the regime falls in Iran, then the entire region has to change. But I don't think it's going to be that easy. And I think it's going to require some real pushing to get that regime to collapse. And that's what I'm kind of afraid of, is that this is not a regime that feels moral exhaustion. This is a regime that feels very strongly, at least at the top echelons, that it's on a mission from God and isn't going to give that up. And they don't want to give up the money either. And I don't know. I don't know that we've seen that kind of regime fall quietly in world history ever.
No, I don't disagree. I think the other difference is you still have a lot of Middle Eastern states, at least publicly, saying don't do this. You know, when the wall fell down, there wasn't a rallying cry to, you know, to don't do that, you know.
Right. Nobody was saying, prop it back up.
Yeah, I don't, and so, you know, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, I'd be fascinated to know what they're saying quietly. And I don't know. I see many reasons why they don't want it, Iran, to collapse, or at least have a free or somewhat free society. But remember with the Iranian attacks on Israel, you know, they let us use their airspace. You know, what they were saying publicly was a lot different than what they were saying privately. So I agree with you, but I do think it's worth the swing. It may blow up, right? We may look back and say this was a bad move and there may be some American loss of life. But I do think if there's ever going to be an opportunity, it's now with this president and this Secretary of State. I don't think many Republicans would do this. I don't think many Republicans would have bombed Iran. So I think, I think the calculus, at least my mind, is let's do it. Let's do it. If it goes bad, we can, you know, do whatever we have to do, or maybe admit we made a mistake. But I think the positives are so historically significant for everybody, for every human being on this planet, particularly the Middle East, who's been trapped in this culture of death for so long. And the Iranian people, unlike the Gazans, and unlike many of the citizenship of some of these Middle Eastern countries, they love America. They want freedom. They're already kind of westernized.
Yep.
You know, you just see the pictures coming out of there. You know, they look, you know, they're better dressed than, you know, the Golden Globes. You know, they're, you know, they're more, you know, they're more attractive than the people on Glamour magazine. You know, so I, you know, again, maybe by the time this airs tomorrow, we'll have more information. But I, you know, I also have to say, and this may be naive, I have a lot of faith in Marco Rubio with all these things. He's been so on point so far. And I'm sitting here going, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Obviously, they know better than I do. And I, you know, maybe one day we'll change our minds. But I have so much faith in Marco Rubio and the president's actions so far on these big geopolitical matters, getting the hostages back, Venezuela, bombing Iran, taking out the nuke sites. Until they give me a reason to be critical and really pile on the doubt, let's give it a couple days. Because
yeah, I think that's fair too. But you know, the issue, of course, there is that people are dying in large numbers during those couple of days. But I think it's fair. I gotta say, I was a little surprised that nothing happened over the weekend.
Me too.
That they didn't do something over the weekend. Right now, I suspect that Iran's trying to do what it can to avoid this. The state TV, by the way, earlier today, said that they would assassinate Donald Trump if the United States did anything in Iran. So it's not as though that they're sending us hearts and flowers at this point. But their foreign minister Arashi was on with Brett Baer this afternoon or early evening, I guess, and they were releasing clips from this. And they're claiming that they have total control over the streets now, which is another thing that I'm curious about. Is have the protests, have they succeeded in clearing the streets? Because that's supposedly what they're claiming right now. The internet's still down. They're clearing their airspace. It doesn't sound like they're in full control. It sounds like they're very, very worried about what's coming next. And so I think that goes to your point. Sometimes you have to wait to see what the sunlight brings, too. I mean, it's probably just becoming sunlight in Iran right now as we're speaking. We may see more in the next few hours. But this is a very loaded moment, I think, in history. After 47 years of this regime, it's a very loaded moment. And there's a lot of things that would go right if this regime falls. And that's something that Trump, I think, understands very clearly.
Yeah, and again, we've had a lot of these moments in the last year. I mean, you know, it's like the operation in Venezuela is right out of, you know, a Mission Impossible movie. I mean, when you read the details, it's incredible. And again, you know, to take out the Iran nuke sites, it's almost like every couple months we have one of these, you know, generational historic moments and we kind of get used to them. But yeah, it's a big deal. We'll see what happens. Again, I think we all, you know, feel and pray for the Iranian people who are, as you said, are dying for freedom. And, look, I know America's not going to solve everybody's problems. I know, you know, Iraq, all that stuff, but I still believe we're the best force for good that's ever existed. And part of our role is to turn over these evil regimes, whether that means supporting people or fighting wars. We didn't fight a war everywhere, but this one is so big. I think again, I can't imagine the dominoes, and I think most of them. And again, you know, I'm always someone who thinks about the people that whether it's the Ukrainians or the Afghan women or the Israeli women after October 7th, or the Gazans who are basically, you know, under the yoke of Hamas and the Iranians, right?
Right.
And that's, you know, those people are telling us they're willing to die for this. And we should not dismiss that, particularly after the president said the cavalry's on the way.
Yes, yes, because it encouraged those protests to continue. People have died because of that. Yep. We have to deliver something on that. Absolutely true. All right. We have to ask, of course, because you're here, what's coming up next for you and Five for Fighting? What's coming up next for your wife's book, Carla Andrasik? Stop Trying.
Yeah. Carla's book, her audio book, is out for her Stop Trying book. And
excellent.
And perhaps she'll be talking to you about that soon. She always loves
it.
And so we just did her first national TV show the other night with Trace Gallagher. And she was all excited and couldn't believe she was driving home listening to herself on Fox News. So that was really fun. And of course, Trace is the man. Fight for Fighting. Yeah, you know, here comes the new year. We're actually doing a few shows in Hawaii, February 3rd, February 4th. Of course, Carla will be joining me on that.
Of course she will be, yes. Yeah.
As well as my kids, their kids' friends. Everybody wants to go to that gig for a reason. I don't know why.
What a shock.
Yeah. And then actually something very cool is happening. We really haven't announced that yet. But as you know, Ed, we did a new version of Superman for the hostages, particularly one hostage named Alon Owell, piano player, who was, in the tunnels of Gaza for over 750 days. And, you know, our dream was always to have a moment where I sat down at a piano and sang and played Superman with Alon. And we spoke about this so many times. I think as we all said the right things, I think we thought the odds of that were slim to none.
Yeah.
But in February, I'll be going to DC at the end of the month, and I will be doing exactly that. I'll be sitting at a piano with Alon. I'll meet him for the first time. I'll hug Edith, his mother, and this dream that we all had for so long will come true. So in this age of cynicism and argument and vitriol, there are moments of joy and miracle, and I am so looking forward to that. And certainly I can't wait to, you know, give you the story as Alon and I play and sing Superman together.
That's going to be so awesome. I know that's going to be one hell of a moment for you. And I just wish for you all the best on that. And I know it's going to be just this enormously grace-filled moment for everyone who gets to experience that. So you can go to fiveforfighting.com, by the way, to find out what other plans John's got going on for his music, as well as for some of his commentary. I'm not sure. Did you link the Wall Street Journal thing over at fiveforfighting.com, or hanging that on the hot air peg just to see?
Yeah, dude. Come on. You're always first.
Well, then great. I'm glad that that's the case. But of course, the Wall Street Journal is the Wall Street Journal. You've probably all seen this, but I really did want to take the opportunity to get down and talk, sit down and talk with you about this. And appreciate you taking the time. And I know you've got lots of busy things going on there, and can't wait to sit down and talk with you. Maybe after the regime falls, fingers crossed, prayers going up, sit down and talk about what's coming up next for liberty around the world.
Well, thank you, buddy. You know, it's always a pleasure, and keep fighting the good fight, and look forward to talking soon.